from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Wojtyn.
Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G.
Hey, good morning to Chef as well. Hey, coming up in 25 minutes, we're going to be talking about how Sean Kemp is one of the first, well, we think he's one of the first black-owned cannabis dispensary owners here in the state of Washington, but we're going to get to the bottom of that. But right now, Ursula, we have a guest.
We do, and of course, on Tuesdays, we always have so many questions, every day, frankly, but on Tuesdays, we get the answers, and that is because Dr. Angela Rasmussen joins us. She is a virologist from Columbia University, and she joins us now. Hi, Angie.
Hi, Ursula. How you doing?
Good. So it has been a heavy week of news, though, as you know, when it comes to COVID-19. I'm just looking at a headline right now. Nearly 500,000 Americans have tested positive for the virus in just the past week. Can you give us an overview from your perspective where we're at as a country with this virus and where this is going in the immediate future?
Well, we're not in a good place right now, unfortunately. If you look at COVID new case rates and positivity in nearly every state, there are increases in testing positivity. There are increases in the number of cases. This suggests that really we are heading to a place where there's going to be uncontrolled spread around the nation in most states. And that really doesn't bode well, considering we are heading into the fall and winter months in which we're all going to be indoors together, particularly in places where people are actually having to go back to work. Or where businesses have reopened to a large degree and people might be in much more close contact with one another.
And Angie, Dr. Fauci and some other health experts are talking about the potential of a need for a nationwide mask mandate. Do you think that would, there are others who say, well, it's too late. Is it too late?
I don't think it's too late. I think that pretty much a nationwide mask mandate is one of the only things we're going to be able to do to encourage widespread mask usage. I think that right now there's been a lot of politicization of these non-pharmaceutical interventions, such as mask wearing, physical distancing, things like that, that have really gotten in the way of people taking these precautions that they need to reduce transmission. If a national mask mandate could compel more people to actually wear masks, I think that would be a good thing, because I just don't think that many people are going to do it on their own.
Dr. Rasmussen, I just saw this. This was posted 4 hours ago, as a matter of fact. Right now, COVID-19 antibodies, they're saying that they fall rapidly after infection. The study has 365,000 people in England found that antibodies fell from 6% of the population around the end of June to just 4.4% in September. They're basically saying that they're thinking that protection from the virus might not be as long lasting as they previously believed. You want to talk about that?
Sure. So there's a couple things about that study that people should keep in mind. One is just the way that the immune system normally works. When you get an infection, you have high levels of antibodies against the virus that's infecting you. And then after you clear that infection, that level of antibodies will go down. Sometimes it can actually go down to a baseline level that is below the limit of detection of the assays used to look for those antibodies. So that may explain some of it. Another feature of that study is that it was done effectively by sampling those hundreds of thousands of people in the UK. They're not necessarily the same people who were sampled in June. So it could just be that they sampled a different population of people within the UK, and they got a number of people who did not have coronavirus previously, and so that's what they're detecting. It's also possible that the tests themselves that are used to look for antibodies are not always very sensitive, and they're not always very specific, and that the tests themselves could be influencing that data. So it's really unclear how we should be interpreting that data. I think for me, the take-home message is that the majority of the population is still susceptible to coronavirus. And we don't really know how antibodies from natural infection will last anyways. We don't know what kind of protection they offer. So people really shouldn't freak out about this. They should know that this is an observation. It's also, it also could be explained by a number of different ways besides just immunities going away. So I think that people really should consider this something that's still an area, a very much an active area of research.
Oh, so another question that we get, and we've actually gotten since we you and G got your flu vaccine, is there any difference between the flu vaccine that your doctor gives you and the one that you can get at the supermarket pharmacy?
Not really. There are several different brands of flu vaccine, but for the most part, they're all quadrivalent vaccines. Some of them differ in the way that they're grown. So some flu vaccines are grown in chicken eggs. Some are recombinant, which means they're expressed in cell lines. But they're all essentially quadrivalent vaccines, which means that they're specific for three different types of influenza A virus and usually one type of influenza B virus. Those viruses are selected based on the viruses that circulate in the southern hemisphere during their flu season, which is opposite of ours. And we use that to try to estimate which flu strains will be circulating in the northern hemisphere during our flu season. We don't always get that right, but all of the vaccines, regardless of the manufacturer or manufacturing method, are essentially inducing immunity against the same four flu strains.
Okay, so you shouldn't avoid going to a pharmacist at a grocery store, for example, like we did. Because I think
exactly.
There were some people who were saying, well, there is a difference, and maybe one of the differences is how much you end up paying for it. One other question.
So there's only one caveat to that, and that
okay.
is if you're over 65 years old,
uh-huh.
You should make sure that you're getting a formulation of the vaccine that is appropriate for older people, because older people don't necessarily have the same robustness of their immune response to a conventional flu vaccine. So they usually have to get a vaccine that has either a higher dose or that has an adjuvant that can amplify those immune responses. But you can also get the 65 plus flu vaccines from a pharmacy or your doctor.
Okay, the other question I had is one of the stories that is kind of making headlines here in Seattle, and that is this inventor's spray that could supercharge your cloth mask against airborne coronavirus. I don't know if you saw that story or you've heard about this, but what are your thoughts on making your mask more effective against airborne coronavirus?
Well, I haven't seen that, but I suspect that, you know, I'm always very skeptical of claims like that because they're usually not very well tested. And I think it's very difficult to test something like that, to say that, you know, a cloth mask could be supercharged, especially if somebody's using language like supercharged. That's not usually a phrase that scientists use to describe something that would enhance antiviral efficacy. So I think that, you know, it's important to wear the mask, period. If you want to try something like that, it probably doesn't hurt, but I'm also very skeptical as to whether or not it actually helps.
I'm going to call you Angie right now, and let's pretend like we are somewhere not on the radio, because, like, I got to tell you, doctor, I've been pretty concerned. I hit Chef this weekend, and I'm like, yeah, this COVID stuff has me really concerned considering the rises that is happening. Let me ask you this. A lot of the country, not all of it, but a lot of the country, a lot of us are wearing masks. We're doing that. We're social distancing. We're trying the best that we can. Maybe we're not perfect. Right now, here we are at the end of October, and cases are rising, okay? Right now, we have a school district that is now going to be, they were back to school. Now, after a month, they're going to be not back to school. Dr. Rasmussen, what can we do? What do we need to do as a society to beat this outside of a vaccine?
So here's the problem. What you just said is that a lot of people are wearing masks and taking precautions, but a lot of people also are not doing that. What we all need to be doing is taking as many precautions as possible to reduce our risk. So if you can't stay home, just make sure that you are avoiding crowded situations, especially indoors or in poorly ventilated spaces, especially if you're going to be in them for long periods of time. Avoid close contact with people. Wear a mask. Practice good hand hygiene, disinfect common high-touch surfaces, and socially distance. if people are implementing as many of those in their daily lives as possible, we would be able to reduce community transmission substantially. We wouldn't be able to eliminate it, but if everybody was being compliant with these non-pharmaceutical interventions, we would certainly reduce transmission. Right now, the biggest problem is getting people to actually do those things. And unfortunately, many of those things, such as wearing masks, has been part of the political conversation rather than part of a public health conversation. And so I think it's really up to us to convince our friends, family, and neighbors to take up as many of those as possible, because risk reduction is really additive. The more of these things we can implement into our daily lives, understanding that not everybody is going to be able to implement them in the same way, but the most of them that we can do, that's going to really help reduce our risk. So I think that is one thing that there are measures that we all can take. So we really just need to focus on continuing to do those, staying the course until we have a safe and effective vaccine that's available to everybody.
And to go a little bit deeper with the possibility of, we talked about this before, you don't foresee any type of phase one possibly for our future, but there is the possibility of restrictions. And one of those is, I really kind of want to talk about, is the restaurant industry. Though I want all restaurants to succeed, I just don't see how, if we're going to be having increased cases, that it is really a good idea for us to walk inside of a restaurant with the mask on. Then when we sit at our table, take the mask off. And then when we leave from our table, we put the mask back on. What's your thoughts on restaurants?
Yeah, this is one of the biggest things that I personally really struggle with, because I really miss going to restaurants badly. I really like going to restaurants and bars and socializing in that way. But, you know, unless we can figure out a way to have dining in an outdoor setting with proper distancing, which I think in many places is just not feasible, at least not without considerable investment, I think it's really, really unsafe to do indoor dining, especially if you're at 50% capacity or above. I think the solution to this is not to just say, well, tough luck, restaurant owners, you're out of business. I think the solution to this is to demand that our political leaders provide some financial support. We need more coronavirus relief in order to support people who run these businesses and get them through this period, because it really is not safe. You are correct, G, to go into a restaurant and sit there with no mask on and eat and talk and put yourself in a position to potentially contract the virus.
I will say, I don't know, Dr. Rasmussen, if you've actually been to any restaurants around here since the pandemic began, but I will say that I have been impressed. Because I have. And I will say I have been impressed with the number of measures that the restaurants that are open, that they have taken. I know that there are exceptions, but I have seen restaurants become very creative in terms of trying to create outdoor space using the heaters, and then how they've been very good about, you know, their employees wearing the masks. And then I even see people at the tables, and I would say including myself, where you do take, you know, put on your mask or take it off and wipe down everything. People bring their own hand sanitizer. I know it's not perfect, but I will say that I have been impressed with the number of instances where I've seen that.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I don't think that restaurants are trying, and restaurant owners or staff are trying to create an inherently unsafe environment at all. I agree with you. I have been to some outdoor restaurants, and I have been impressed as well with the precautions that they're taking just right here in my own neighborhood in Eastlake. I think, though, that when you get to a situation in which you are indoors, yes, that's when no matter how many things you put into place, you can't completely eliminate the fact that it's a high-risk environment.
No, I totally understand that. Okay, speaking of things that could be risky, but I know that many parents and maybe some of the teens who were planning Halloween activities, how can you do Halloween safely if you still want to, you know, have your kids have some semblance of Halloween?
Well, I actually think that Halloween is a pretty safe, trick-or-treating is a pretty safe activity for people to do. It's mostly outdoors. any contact with people whose houses you're trick-or-treating at is going to be very quick and incidental. You can wash your hands, certainly have your kids wash their hands before they eat any of the candy when they get home. But trick-or-treating in general, I think, is a pretty safe activity during the pandemic. I think what should be avoided is like a large Halloween party or a carnival or something where you're going to have a large crowd of people potentially in close contact with each other for a long period of time. I think, though, trick-or-treating itself is a great activity. And if people are uncomfortable with trick-or-treaters coming to their house, you could certainly leave candy outside. I know in my house, like, we tend to eat the candy if it's inside anyways. But I do think that Halloween is one of those holidays that actually you might not have to change that much from your normal trick-or-treating plans.
Dr. Rasmussen, this is very serious right here in what I'm going to ask you. 35 million pounds of this particular candy is produced every year, and Halloween is on the way. Candy corn. What's your thoughts on candy corn, Dr. Rasmussen?
So serious.
Not a fan. I know that people have very polarizing views on this, but I've personally never been a fan of candy corn. I'm more of a Reese's peanut butter cup kind of girl.
You heard it, Ursula. You heard her.
Yes.
You heard her. That's why we good people, Dr. Rasmussen.
I'm going to come in defense of those who also specifically it has to be Brock's candy corn, and I'm in agreement with those who say those are the best types of candy corn when you get the Brock's candy corn or the little pumpkin heads. But a little goes a long way.
And just so you know, we have a lot of candy corn fans on our show. Yesterday, I had people tell me that they were not listening to the show anymore because I was disrespectful towards candy corn. Before we let you go, thank you for answering all of our COVID questions. But before we let you go, I don't know if you're dressing up for Halloween this year, but what is your best Halloween costume that you've ever worn that you say that was the year that I really did well?
Well, that's a tough one. When I was five, I think this was probably original, one of the most original for my first grade class. There was a TV show on at the time called V about these aliens that invaded Earth, and they were secretly lizard people. And I dressed up as the head alien, Diana, except her in her human form. So really, I was just wearing like a sequined black bodysuit, but... I think that was probably the most original Halloween costume, if not the best. I dressed up as a New Kids on the Block fan later in my adolescent career. And to be honest, I haven't dressed up for Halloween in probably 10 years. So let's just go with Diana from B.
If you want to hear of my originality, 2 years ago I dressed as Ursula the Sea Witch.
Oh, that's perfect, actually. I mean, you look nothing like Ursula the Sea Witch, but it's really
some people would disagree.
Dr. Rasmussen, thank you so much for joining us. Tell Taz hello.
I will always do.
All right. Ursula, did you figure out your outfit for this weekend?
I'm not dressing up. But I will be giving up. I'm good.
That's not what you told Chef and I.
I know.
Remember, you were. During
I was debating it because I was. Yeah, we're gonna have guest, and I guess I will have a mask on.
Remember, what's that one
that's
song?
Gonna happen.
What's that one song that you always like to sing?
Reunited.
Coming up next, Chef did not put it on the show sheet what we're going to talk about. So it's going to be a bonus. It's going to be a wild card on what we're going to do. We'll be having some fun next. It's G and Ursula.
Welcome back to the G and Ursula Show, Tuesday edition. This hour of our show is brought to you by Economy Fence Center. So we have 7 days left until the election. Do I need to remind you? Both national polls and swing state surveys are showing that the race is tightening between President Trump and Vice President Joe Biden. The president has gained a little ground in 9 out of 12 swing states, but Biden is still leading in 10 of them. So I want to ask you a question, G, mm-hmm. Something that you often like to ask, which is, On a scale of 1 to 10, what is your level of concern with the election one week away?
Tim.
Okay.
Tim.
Yeah, I couldn't even get the words out of my mouth. Okay, why is it a 10?
You Chef's got kids. You've had kids. I got kids.
I still have kids.
Well, I'm talking about when they were little kids.
Okay.
You remember when your kids were younger and upstairs, the kids are all upstairs or they're in the room, but it's quiet. And you think, wait a minute, why is it quiet?
Now, are they up to?
Now, usually you're probably happy, like, ooh, I'm glad the kids are being quiet. That's not a good thing when kids are quiet. When kids are quiet, they are up to something no good. It's kind of been quiet, right? Quiet now. Mm-hmm. And it feels like it is the calm before the storm. I am so concerned and nervous over the next 7 days. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if Ice Cube and 50 Cent is going to show up on stage with President Trump. I don't know what's going to happen. But something is going to be drastically happening in the next 7 days. And it also makes me nervous, and my concern go to what's happening. People are bringing in a National Guard in some cities, and because they are afraid of what's going to happen, preparing for
mm-hmm.
civil unrest. I'm afraid for that. I'm afraid for. I mean, it's still a pandemic. It's still 2020, and if there's one thing that 2020 has taught us is hold my beer. I got something else for you every single week. So
it's so
very
true.
Much concerned.
And I shouldn't be laughing, because actually it is very serious. I don't think it's been quiet though. And you can see that the first things first for me, I don't trust polls. So even when it had Joe Biden up by double digits, mm-hmm. I don't trust polls. What's encouraging to me is seeing the number of people who are going out, even in early voting. And this is CBS's political analyst, Larry Sabato. And he said, this is very different from 2016.
People have been voting daily since mid-September. And that's why we have somewhere around 64, 65 million votes.
So there's definitely going to be huge turnout statewide. We are expecting a 90% or more turnout.
In 2016, we heard a lot. I mean, at least I did. A lot of people like, oh, I'm not voting. I'm not going to be voting because it's just a lesser of two evils. No, there were a lot of people that did not vote in 2016. And I don't hear that much. And I'm definitely encouraged. You look at the numbers. You look at everybody voting. And we're going to find out. We're going to find out if people are motivated to vote because they are tired of what's going on, or if people are motivated to vote because they are super excited about what's going on in our country. Either way, we're going to be finding that out in about 7 days.
Okay. In 2016, there was a lot of talk about people secretly supporting Trump but not letting people know, and which is why a lot of people were surprised, which is why, again, the polls were off, although there are people who will argue that, no, they weren't that off. But let's face it, the outcome was not what most were predicting. So I think 2016 has changed, at least for me, has forever changed my idea of how much I would trust polls.
See, if I can address that, because my level of anxiety right now is actually about a 3. Like, I feel like we've hit the calm. We've already gone through the storm when it comes to all the turmoil over politics. Yes, we're still in a pandemic, but I feel like we're coming to a head and we get an outcome. And I don't trust the polls, but for the opposite reason of that whole secret voter problem. I think last election, there were a lot of secret Donald Trump voters who wouldn't tell a pollster on the phone, yeah, I'm going to vote for the guy. I think this year there are probably a lot of secret Joe Biden voters. There are probably people who have Trump signs in their front yard.
I think there are a lot of secret Trump voters still.
I think I would say secret Biden voters would outweigh them this year. I think there are people who have seen what the president's done and would never admit it to someone from the opposite side of the aisle that, yeah, I'm going to support Joe Biden. But secretly, they've had enough.
I know people that do that all the time, that you know, they can't really, you know, talk about their affiliation too much tough over social media, but behind closed doors, they talk about what they plan to do. Here's a theory too. In 2016, and one of the things that I think we all have learned and found out, that sometimes when ballots come to households, and sometimes the husband or the man of the house or maybe the lady of the house, somebody might take that opportunity to, quote, vote for the house, right? You've heard of that before, Ursula.
Mm-hmm.
It happens. Fortunately or unfortunately, it does happen. I think that the difference this year will be, in 2016, go ahead, Larry. Go ahead. You can fill out my stuff. I don't really care. I think the difference is in this year, hey, Larry, give me that ballot. I'm voting too this time. We had some people text in on our line, that text on our text, and said that they did not tell their husband that they voted for Biden. It came in on our text line. So there's a lot of people that are going to be voting. Like, hey,
we need to open our phone lines.
Yes.
This week. Oh my gosh, if you are
you think it don't happen?
If you have a mixed household, and if you and how you're trying to work through that, I would love to hear that.
You know, I'd love to hear from two kids who are trying to convince their parents to vote the other way.
Oh yeah. Oh, no. I mean, I'm seeing it all over social media, and people are doing kind of this funny dance of how they're going, no matter how much their parent is begging them to vote one way or the other, that they're, you know, prancing over to the mail.
Look, check this out. I didn't see Lillian's vote. She sealed hers up.
Should you show your spouse your ballot?
You know what I'm saying?
We voted as a family. And there are things that my husband and I will not vote on together, but that this time around and we're making sure we are 100%. So we sent our son his ballot over to Colorado. So this is going to be his first year of voting.
I bet you there's going to be some people that's texting in. They're like, hey, guys.
I want to hear those stories.
I'll keep this anonymous, but I voted this way, and my significant other thinks that I voted a certain way. You know what? As a matter of fact, now that I think about it, I didn't even ask Lillian how she voted. I need to ask.
It shouldn't be your business, right? I mean, unless you want it to be. You shouldn't force somebody to tell you how they're voting.
Does your husband know how you voted?
Yeah, absolutely. Because we were we chose to discuss it. There were a couple races that we voted differently, and that's fine.
253. Here we go. I love the G and Ursula Show listeners, because y'all keep it 100. Here we go. 253, didn't tell my wife I voted for Trump. Didn't want her to beat me.
Oh, no. Okay.
Folks, going to be we doing it. Hey, coming up in scenarios, I just want to say this, Ursula. I got like three scenarios on deck, and I don't want to. This one is good, so I'm gonna save it for tomorrow. Tomorrow's Wednesday, right? Yeah.
Yes.
I'm going to save this particular scenario for tomorrow. But this one I have here, this is a good one, too. So hang on. Hold tight. Scenario's coming next. It's Gina. It's the pillow fight coming up in 15 minutes. Ursula, that's where you and I agree to disagree.
Can't wait.
I got to tell you, that was my favorite part of the show, what we just did just now.
I know.
I mean,
it's because people are fessing up right now on our
text
line.
People are texting in. Then in the break, Lillian and I, we're talking about, you know, I'm like, hey, how did you vote, by the way? Because I never asked. And then she asked me, she says, wait, could we be together if I voted a certain way? No. I said that.
Seriously?
Seriously.
Okay, because we're getting so many texts, maybe we can, we're going to come back to it. Let's come back to it at 11:30. Right, we're going to share some of your texts.
Let's get to scenarios.
Okay. Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's
the scenario? G. Ursula and Chef, here's the deal. I've been dating my girlfriend for a year now, and we are getting serious to the point of proposal being in our future. She's talking more and more about marriage, and I'm interested, too. But here's a problem. I know, Ursula, you're going to be mad at me, but here it is. She has a puppy that she got a few months ago. She hasn't done a really good job in training him. The dog is an absolute nightmare. It tears up everything, uses the bathroom in the house, takes up all her time, barks, whines, jumps on us, chews on everything. Basically, this puppy is out of control, and she doesn't do anything about it. She loves this dog. She can't live without him, but it's making me crazy, and I can't live with this dog. And now I think it may be too old to even train. At least I don't even want to be bothered with it. It has affected our relationship. I love her and want to progress into a deeper relationship, get married and everything, but this is enough. I even asked her if it was between me or the dog, who would she pick? She said she wasn't sure and started crying. That tells me she would choose the dog. Is this normal? Should I not be worried about this? We have not been the same since the talk and have been on the outs. What do you think? 989-73, State Roofing text line. Ursula, you up to bat.
Okay, first of all, how old did you say this dog was? As a puppy, right?
Mm-hmm.
A puppy is only a puppy for so long. They get out of the puppy phase, right?
Yep.
Although I will say Scooter is 10 now and he still often acts like a puppy, but that's our bad. We didn't do a good job with the puppy training. It's not too late to get puppy training. I'm more concerned about this guy. If I were the woman, I would really have some serious red flags. If a dog, a puppy, being a puppy is enough to make him have second thoughts and that he's jealous of her time and he's annoyed with this puppy, imagine when they have kids, if they decide to have kids. I don't think he's cut out for marriage. He's got to have an attitude adjustment. Okay.
Chef?
All right. You're spot on that. Like,
seriously?
If he has jealousy issues with the puppy, he's going to have a problem with kids. Never ask the lady to choose between the dog and you. You're going to lose. I mean, the dog is popular most of the time. You will have your ups and downs. Now, that being said, like an animal can be a legit deal breaker for someone, right? Like, if you have a messy animal... I'm not kidding. If you're allergic to a cat or if you have a dog that, you know, I'm sorry, I just don't like dogs if you're that type of person, that's absolutely a relationship deal breaker. The question is, hey, if she can't train her puppy, man, how's she going to raise the kids? Just imagine how terrible it's going to be. Dude, grow up. Grow up.
Thank you.
I got a message the other day. And by the way, I listened to you guys' messages, just so you guys know. I got a message the other day that said, "Gee, I notice in scenarios that you always take the guy's side. Why is that?" And I was thinking, I was like, you know what? You're kind of right. I kind of do take the guy's side. But this time right here, my man, player, did you really just say that the puppy is too late to train? Here's what you do. This is just very simple. You look on your phone and you type this in for me. Professional dog trainer. And go get the dog trained. I'm going to tell you this. If you don't be with this woman because of this dog, then be prepared. Because, boy, I'm telling you right now, if that's her only red flag, then you're in trouble, my man. So this time I'm taking her side and I'm telling you, the man, to go and type in professional dog trainer.
Or if you can't afford a professional dog trainer, pick up a book, Google, find out how you can do it yourself.
Yeah. Now, who's going to train Scooter?
Still working on that one. Hey, but my kids turned out well.
Coming up next, Ursula and I, we agree to disagree. It's the Gene Ursula Show.